This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 11th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all today's agricultural news. There are reports U.S. beef exports to South Korea will resume. We've heard that one before. And that a new set of regulations is making its way through the red tape on Capitol Hill. It would cause all those purchasing ammonium nitrate, those are the little white pellets in your dry fertilizer, to enroll with Homeland Security. I better maybe get that weed and feed on my lawn now. Hey, speaking of fertilizer, Emerson Navsigger, agronomist at the University of Illinois, has penned an article not on fertilizers, but the potential disease problems in corn after corn. I'll take you through the writing, or you can find it yourself, on the U of I's IPM website. It's at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. And don't forget that on Wednesdays, we always talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And that happens on this edition of the Closing Market Report from AM 580.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Want to review something you heard on the Closing Market Report? Then AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts are for you. Get all our ag programming delivered daily to your computer. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the red podcast link in the right navigation window. Follow the simple instructions and you will never miss a Closing Market Report again. You can also subscribe to the pre-opening and opening market reports and our flagship show, Commodity Week. AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts. It's your marketing advantage.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat finished the May at 456 and a quarter, down a penny and a half. July futures were down 3 1/4 at 470 and three quarters. And September's at 481 and three quarters, down 1 1/4. May corn futures at 360 and three quarters, down 8 1/4. July at 372 and three quarters were down 8.5 cents. And December contract down 6 3/4 at 387 and three quarters for the day. May soybeans at 746 and a half. They were up 4. July up 3.5 at 764. And November beans at 791 and three quarters, up 4 1/4 for the day. May bean meal futures at 205.10. They were 30 higher. May bean oil up 32 cents at 32.78. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange, 110.10. They were off 85 cents for the day in the April contract. Live cattle, April futures there at 99.92 1/2, down 35 cents. And June futures at 94.62 1/2 for the live cattle, down $1.17 1/2. Outside markets, May crude oil at $61.96 a barrel, 7 cents higher. The June are down 8 cents at $64.80. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,474. That's down right at 99 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Good morning, or good afternoon, good. Todd. How are you?
I'm very...
Trying to talk on three things at once.
Here. Well, you know, that happens when you have a really busy office, that you get busy and you're on the phone a lot. But I bet you've been on the phone a lot today. It was a day, I suppose, for the Bears in Chicago in the corn pit. Was that right?
Yeah. You know, number one, when my private meteorologist made a special footnote, Paul, it's not as cold or as wet as for particularly the second week. And, you know, the noon models confirmed that we'd still be battling with some moisture Saturday, but it's probably further south, not as heavy, and we're not going to be battling with as much rain next week. It's hard to tell somebody that's got a couple of inches of snow on LaSalle Street or a couple of inches in North Dakota or that the weather's not important today on April 11th, but it is a kinder, gentler weather forecast. Along with that, you know, we are micro-tuning this idea that we are fairly bullish wheat. We do see major damages in the wheat circles, not only in the soft wheat, but the hard red winter wheat areas. Customers are calling up and saying, hey, it did a number. And then the other factor is that the corn crop, particularly in the south, got hit pretty hard with a cold shot. So there's a lot of things going on. Let's face it, the other thing that's been brought to my attention by these farmers and also merchandisers is that the Corn Belt, everybody wants to farm just like everyone does in Champaign County on some good black Drummer Flanagan soil, well-drained, and get good prices like they do, but they push the Corn Belt in a lot of areas, and it's hard to, you know, get corn to grow just like it does in Champaign.
You bet. It was easier to do beans than it was corn, but we'll see whether Roundup can manage to change that trick. I don't know whether that'll be the case or not. We'll have to wait that one out. I do found something interesting in the numbers from the board just a bit, because there's a lot of talk that today was for the Bears, that we've turned some things around and we've got the Bears, I don't know about in control, but they're feeling much better at this point about markets moving lower. And if that's the case, and we're going to put 90 million acres in the ground and we're going to get it all planted because the weather is going to be better, why is it the deferreds were down more or weren't as low as the nearbys today? What's the difference?
Well, there? A couple of things from point A to point B is that point B is that China's also talking about dumping 1.25 million metric tons of corn into the world marketplace, and that is something that we've always sort of like the stick in the closet. If you don't behave, Dad's going to come home and beat you. It's sort of like that, and they've advertised that in January and February, and they've advertised it again right now. And what we're basically finding is the Chinese internal corn prices are extremely high, and the Chinese government probably very reluctant to let that corn go. And some of the people that have that corn in the export channels have it positioned, and it's hard to change logistics on it. So we continue to hear that war cry. Now, the question is why is old crop lower to new crop? Ultimately, we will grow demand enough with world demand, domestic demand, to ethanol and other growth areas to demand a pretty good carry in the marketplace and better demand down the road. At some point in time, the market is going to demand several million acres taken out of the conservation reserve and put into corn, but it's not there yet, Todd, and that's one reason why we're seeing a carry in the marketplace. There is this perception that feed demand and maybe exports are a little soft, and we have enough nearby corn to basically follow through, and that's the reason why we're trying to develop a carry in the market.
Indeed. So as you look out, and we had those higher prices well above $4 for a while, did that do much to deter those who have not put a spade in the ground yet for the ethanol plants?
You know, my opinion is that it might have, but I sense a new robust amount of energy and new plants going up and a new sense of money being invested in the farmer. Investors are as almost as, you know, gracefully and respectively, it's not vogue for farmers to put money into those plants as much as it was 6 months to a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
They're going after really big-time investors and, you know, the Goldman Sachs, those kind of people to get the money, and they have to do three things: have more money, have it better plans, better organized, and better ideas. And then it's a done deal. But no, ethanol and ethanol construction, I think, is even as good or better, because I hear rumors about four or five plants within a 50 to 75 mile area of us. And so, you know, I think that's still very much alive.
You think the bear's right? We can put 15 million extra in the ground and have it all up and rolling?
You know, my hunch is no. And I think that we won't see 90 million acres of corn. And I don't think a lot of this is based on a lot of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio wheat will be planted to corn and the wheat tore up. I don't buy that one, and I don't buy all the south acreage going planted as many acres as corn, and I also don't buy that all the Dakota acres will be planted to corn. So, you know, maybe a couple million acres less corn, and I think that's enough to stabilize the market. But right now the market thinks we're going to get 90 million acres of corn, and we've lost the export market, and we've lost the feed usage market, and the market's pretty heavy right now.
I said 15 million, and I meant 15% or 12 million. So I was adding 3 million extra acres, and that might have dropped the market just a bit, huh?
And, you know, the perception with the beans being higher is that we won't make the switch to beans, and the bean market acted a lot better, too. And, you know, it was a pretty logical type day when it was all said and done.
Yeah, how about over at the Mercantile Exchange?
Well, you know, a couple things over there. In the general feeling, is the biggest headline that I saw was that the typical cattle feeder is losing $25 a head on fattening cattle, and the typical hog producer is making, you know, $15 to $20 a head on hogs. So, you know, feed margins aren't bad everywhere. It's just in the cattle industry, and the hog industry is doing pretty darn good right now. You know, that's the big factor. Hey, everywhere I went this weekend, the restaurants were full, and, you know, beef and pork is still a major product of importance at the meat counter. And, you know, you wouldn't notice that there was any slowdown on the U.S. economy at Carbondale, Illinois, where was that this weekend?
Yeah, speaking of U.S. economy, did you see the home prices headline headed for a historic drop? Any concern there at all?
You know, the wealthy homes, the $300,000 and $400,000 homes are selling well, and it's the smaller, $85,000 to $150,000 homes that are having trouble. So, you know, it's an identifiable problem, and I think it has something to do with the mortgage payments. So it is a concern, and we don't like to have any problems with any of the financial sectors, because that is a slowdown or a negative aspect to the U.S. economy.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather. AM580's own Ed Kieser says a winter storm warning is in effect for Joe Davey, Stevenson, Carroll, and Whiteside counties in northwestern Illinois. That until 10 o'clock. For 6 to 8 inches of snow this evening, a winter advisory is in effect for Rock Island, Henry, Bureau, and Putnam counties in northwestern Illinois until 7 o'clock. For 1 to 3 inches of snow, and a snow advisory in effect for Winnebago, Boone, McHenry, and Lake counties in far northern Illinois. That until 4 a.m. tomorrow morning. For 4 to 7 inches of snow, and a snow advisory in effect for Ogle, Lee, DeKalb, and Kane counties in the north central part of Illinois until 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. For 3 to 5 inches of snow. This is April the 11th, isn't it? Tonight it says far northern Illinois, snow with 4 to 8 inches likely. Elsewhere in the north, periods of snow in central sections, rain showers changing to snow, and lows from 26.
In agricultural news, Washington Insider is reporting that South Korean officials say they will resume imports of U.S. beef if the World Organization for Animal Health categorizes the U.S. as a controlled risk country, as anticipated in May. Trade Minister Lee Hung-min says South Korea will import beef from cows under 30 months of age, except parts of the small intestine, tonsils, and specified risk material. But South Korean officials did not definitively offer a date for resumption of U.S. beef trade. A House Homeland Security Subcommittee has approved a bill that would create new regulations for the sale and purchase of ammonium nitrate fertilizer. The bill would require the Homeland Security Secretary to create a registry. Anyone purchasing ammonium nitrate fertilizer would be required to enroll. The bill also requires registration of all owners of ammonium nitrate fertilizer facilities, with penalties up to $50,000 for noncompliance. The bill requires a record of all sales for 3 years. The measure has the support of the Fertilizer Institute Industry Group. The Bush administration has finalized its first renewable fuels standard, one that the industry is already outpacing. The EPA yesterday approved a 7.5 billion gallon RFS by 2012. It calls for 4.7 billion gallons this year. Corn-based ethanol plants already online can produce 5.7 billion gallons annually. EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson.
While the Energy Policy Act of 2005 set more modest levels for the RFS rulemaking, the flexible design of our program allows for adaptation of new fuels and new standards. Put simply, the renewable fuel standard offers the American people a hat trick. It protects the environment, it strengthens our energy security, and supports America's farmers.
The EPA initially implemented the RFS in January 2006 under a default rule. The final rule is more comprehensive and includes trading provisions that allow gasoline refiners flexibility in blending ethanol into gasoline. Meanwhile, the Bush administration has scaled back a January 2000 executive order calling for the federal government to cut its oil use. The initial order directed federal agencies to cut oil use by 20% over 5 years. The new order is 16% over 8 years. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the agency will present Congress the actual language for its farm bill proposal. Johanns says the writing is now underway, and USDA hopes to release the entire bill within 45 days and two titles, conservation and rural development, within 2 weeks. The administration had previously discussed ideas for the farm bill. And ConocoPhillips yesterday announced it is partnering with Iowa State University to fund $22.5 million for research on biofuels. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both of those programs, Friday and Saturday of this week, will originate from the Chicago Board of Trade. Tune in Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report and Saturday morning for Commodity Week from the CBOT. Well, up next, we'll review an article by Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger at the University of Illinois, who took on the subject of corn after corn and diseases and the problems that are created when you take rotation out of your management toolbox. All plant diseases rely on three things for their development: the pathogen, the susceptible host, and a conducive environment, writes U of I Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger in this week's edition of The Bulletin. You can read it online at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. Producers, he says, have full control over just one of these components, the susceptible host, since they choose what they want to grow in a particular field. All of the three components must be in place for a disease to occur. With corn on corn, the option of managing diseases with crop rotation, of course, is gone, so other management tactics are relied upon. The first and one of the most important is hybrid selection, says Nafziger. Choosing a hybrid with a high level of resistance to disease is always a good idea, and the benefits of a hybrid with a good disease-resistant package are likely to be even greater when planting back into corn. Fungicides are another way to manage foliar fungal diseases of corn. Fungicides are likely to benefit susceptible hybrids more than hybrids that have high levels of resistance to foliar diseases, and even more so when the previous year's corn debris is left on the soil surface. However, he says a fungicide may not be able to overcome all the detrimental characteristics of a susceptible hybrid. Also, farmers should note only foliar diseases can be controlled with currently available foliar fungicides for corn. That according to the labels. Now, Nafziger writes this week that there is potential for different types of disease to increase in corn-on-corn situations. Foliar fungal diseases are generally the first diseases that come to mind, but an increase of other pathogens may also occur. In Illinois, these foliar fungal diseases are primarily gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, and northern corn leaf spot, which harbor in infected corn debris. The risk of ear and stalk rot diseases, such as diplodia ear rot and anthracnose stalk rot, may also increase in corn on corn. Below the soil, diseases caused by root rot pathogens and nematodes can also be on the increase in a corn on corn situation. Most of the nematodes that can damage corn are specific to that crop and are usually managed fairly well with rotation, which, of course, in corn-on-corn does not occur. In summary, he says the risk of disease does increase when going to corn-on-corn. However, all three pieces of the disease component triangle must be in place for diseases to occur. To reduce risk in corn-on-corn, plant the best disease-resistant hybrids available, scout fields for disease, and, if needed, apply a fungicide to control leaf diseases. The U of I emphasizes that there is no way to determine if a foliar fungicide will be warranted in a particular field before the crop is planted. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Kay Whitlock joins us from Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Rainy and wet there, like it is here.
We've had 3/4 of an inch so far today, and more on the way, Friday and Saturday. So there's no doubt that there's not going to be anything done here for a couple weeks, probably.
Yeah, the same here, but expectations are that it will dry out, and maybe we'll get some sunshine, and some of that rainfall that we were thinking the following week won't show up. Probably has given the market the impetus to move a bit lower at Chicago today. Did the basis move down as well?
No, we've improved the nearby basis just a little bit, mainly because the guys are just trying to get ready to get in the field. They've been putting down anhydrous or whatever, so the nearby basis has improved a little bit, but new crop values are still terribly, terribly wide and probably won't change at all. But, yeah, the nearby basis is a tad better, Todd, and hopefully that'll get better as we stay in the field.
How much wider than normal are the new crop bids at this point?
Well, for this time of year, I would say close to 15 cents in corn and probably 15 to 20 cents in beans as well, maybe even 25. But normally this time of year, you kind of start out with historical levels. But, you know, there is no historical level anymore, so it's ever just what everybody else does. That's what you do, and you pay attention to what the end user is paying and go from there.
Yeah, not when you're looking at a 90 million bushel or 90 million acre crop, I suppose, Arthur, and not really knowing how many of those bushels will come to fruition. You know, what's your feeling about new crop sales?
Well, you know, I've been a skeptical bull, you know, all along, and hopefully in this area, we've got a lot already on the books. Now, some guys do not. I think they need to look at it pretty closely here, because I think this corn carryout is going to continue going up. I truly do, and I'm just not all that bullish on these corn prices without some weather markets. But they were just kind of doing the ratio thing today. But if we do continue with planting delays, I think they need to be looking at new crop and cash sales to get rid of some stuff. I really do, because this market could trend lower.
I thought that might be the case. What are your bids for the day?
All right, cash corn is 336, cash beans 708, new crop wheat is 376.
We appreciate it, Kay.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner in just a couple of minutes. Your regional newscast, it comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois' agricultural industry is honoring farmers who've done their part to address global warming. A program initiated last year allows people who use conservation practices to cut down on emissions and earn carbon credits. Farmers who set land aside for planting or use devices to control methane from animal manure can sell the credits to biotech companies for their own use. Illinois EPA Director Doug Scott says nearly 200 farmers took part in the program last year. Concerns over equipment shortages for the Illinois National Guard and other units have drawn the attention of lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Lieutenant General Stephen Bloom is the chief of the National Guard Bureau. He says it'll take $36 billion over 6 years to bring equipment levels to where they should be. Bloom says the war in Iraq has caused many of the equipment shortages. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin told fellow members of the Senate Appropriations Defense Subcommittee that his state's units on average have only about 35% of what they need. He says the shortage makes it harder for states to handle natural disasters and other emergencies at home. The Indiana Senate has approved a two-year budget proposal that would steer more money to education and a bill that would overhaul Indiana's property tax system. Both bills now head to joint House-Senate conference committees, where lawmakers from both chambers will hammer out compromises before the regular legislative session comes to a close at the end of this month. The GOP-controlled Indiana Senate approved a $26 billion budget plan that would provide more money to universities, prisons, and Medicaid, while capping overall spending increases at a maximum of 4% each year. A central Illinois teenager died of exposure to the cold after running from an alleged underage drinking party in mid-February with no coat or shoes. That's according to testimony at a Livingston County coroner's inquest this week. The coroner's jury ruled yesterday that 16-year-old Travis Steininger's death was accidental and caused by hypothermia. The U.S. Postmaster General says his plan to improve postal service in Chicago is his number one priority. John Potter and postal officials say 91% of letters mailed to addresses in the city are delivered within 1 day, but the national average is 95%. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I'd say it's good afternoon, but it's been wet and rainy and cold and ugly and... gosh, I hope you have good news for me, but I'm betting not.
Well, actually, there could be some brightness on the horizon there. It certainly is yucky weather for April, absolutely. And we are going to look for some kind of a change, though, coming up here next week with less precipitation and perhaps some warming as well. We couldn't possibly be any colder than we've been in the last week or so, I imagine. But we are going to see a gradual return to normal temperatures. Normal temperatures this time of the year, by the way, run from the 50s in the northern part of the Midwest to the 60s in the south. And by the south, we're talking about the area from Kansas eastward through Ohio and down into Kentucky. So we will get there, and we will get there next week. It looks like the precipitation bias will start to back off once we get through this weekend. Unfortunately, we have the current storm system, which is underway, which will persist for another 12 to 24 hours. We'll take a tiny little break during the day tomorrow, and then by Friday morning, another round of precipitation will be moving through the lower parts of the eastern Midwest from Kansas straight eastward through the Ohio River Valley, and some of that rain will probably run 1.5 to 1.5 inches again. So certainly adding more insult to the injury. But we will be looking at drier weather after that. It'll be cold, though, for a day or two towards the latter part of the weekend and early part of next week, and then we'll start to warm up a little bit. It'll be a gradual process. Temperatures will be closer to normal for the middle to latter part of next week. There is one little disturbance that will pass through the lower parts of the Midwest as we go Wednesday into Thursday. Actually, it may begin as early as late Tuesday, but Tuesday into Thursday morning, we'll see a little bit of cloudiness and some shower activity, but the rain amounts will be light, probably 1/4 of an inch or less, and then we'll be even warmer probably to finish out the week next week and go into the following weekend. The next storm system would hold off until maybe the 22nd or 23rd in the western belt and the 23rd and 24th in the eastern area. So there's some light of hope here on the horizon. I do think we'll see a little bit of a better environment for planting, but it's probably going to come late this month.
You know, you got to be careful about what you hope for and wish for, but will there be a little wind to help the evaporation and drying out during that time frame too?
There will be some. I don't see a lot. The atmosphere is rather quiet during that period of time. We've got no general high or low pressure center present, so the winds won't be all that significant. I'm not convinced that the relative humidity is going to be all that low either, just simply because we're going to get a lot of feedback from the ground through evaporation. So the humidity might still be a little on the high side.
Well, the good news, of course, is that April showers always bring May flowers, and by the time we get to then, hopefully we'll have corn in the ground and some beans planted as well here in the United States. Better wrap up, speaking of bean planting, what's been happening in South America as they finish up harvest.
Yeah, in Brazil, we're certainly on the home stretch here, with the exception of Rio Grande do Sul and some immediate neighboring areas in the far south. It's been pretty wet down there, and it's going to be difficult to get their crop harvested in the next couple of weeks. I imagine there's going to be two waves of rain moving through that region here shortly, and that additional precipitation on saturated soil is just going to leave them out of the fields for a little while longer. But that's a small part of the nation's overall crop, and most of it has been harvested, and field work in the central and northern areas is moving along quite swiftly. It's Argentina that's way behind on some of its field work, and that's because of that record-setting flood that occurred earlier this month in late March. We still have flood water receding in eastern portions of that country. The ground is beginning to firm up, though, in some of the western and southern areas. Soybean harvesting is underway and is expected to start to accelerate as we move forward through the balance of this month.
Drew, we appreciate it much.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Drew Lerner, of course, is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets with your director of agricultural programming here at the stations. I'm Todd Gleason. His name is Dave Dickey.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.